Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to Breaking the Silence. We are absolutely live. Live radio from the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas. And I'm literally watching. I wish that we were on video tonight so you can just see the sunset right over. It's just coming right into my window and warming up my house. And I just love this city. And it's looking over the medical center where all the top hospitals in the world is right here across the street from where I live. And just welcome to the program tonight. This is going to be, we always promise you, a good 55 to 58 minutes of just absolute wonderful information. And I looked down I got on my Xfinity TV just a while ago and just scanned down the guide and wondered what I was missing. And you know, I'm not missing a thing on TV tonight, unless you want to do the Grease sing-along on ABC. And I'm just not interested in doing that this evening. But there's just nothing on TV. Grab you a cup of coffee, a soda, some sweet tea or whatever, and sit back and just take in the information and the guests that we have this evening. Because as I look over a beautiful horizon of a wonderful city landscape, I can also look down into homes and realize that right now, inside of most of these homes, there's tension, there's anxiety, there's confusion, there's questions, there's people wondering what's going to happen in this world next, right here in probably one of the most awesome, in my opinion, cities in the world. And I know it's like that where our guest is at too. And I have literally been online. I can't type and finish one email without getting others from all the webinars that I've done this past week. And apparently somebody's watching these because they're reaching out and asking questions and just telling me and pouring out their hearts of saying, Greg, I'm looking for hope. What can I do? How can I help my kids? What is going to be the outcome of all this? And how am I supposed to handle what life's dealt me right now? And I want to let you know that our guest tonight is going to be a perfect person to be able to give you some wisdom. So grab a note, piece of paper, an ink pen or a pencil. Be ready to write some things down because he's going to just pour it out on you this evening. I'm looking forward to this. Next week right here, we have Elijah Penny. And I met her, and we'll talk about this more in detail, in Las Vegas, I believe, at a conference a year ago or more. And she is a life coach. She was involved in helping people in sexual trafficking there. She's got a new reign on life. But next week, she is going to break her own personal silence right here and tell the world about what's happened to her in her past with sexual abuse, with domestic violence, and how things can just turn around for a person once you get to that point of wanting to reach out and get help. So that'll be next week. Elijah Penny. And I'm looking forward to that. And she's just a wonderful human being. You know, a week or so ago, we did a University of Michigan education CME program or something for the residents and maybe the fellows and some physicians and alumni and anybody that wants to get on the program and to watch and get some information about some topics that are really important today. And they put me in with a wonderful co-presenter, and his name's Sean Hankins. And Sean and I just kind of, at least I did, I don't know about Sean, but what he thinks, but I just fell in love with Sean. He's just a wonderful human being. And we just had a hoot of presenting together about ACEs, resiliency, and the things that's happening in the world right now and how to get through it. And I asked Sean if he would be a guest on the program tonight. Sean Hankins is the director of the Michigan State University Adolescence Diversion Program, and he may go into detail about what that even means. Most of the things on his bio, I don't even understand. It's hard for me to even read it because it's way over my head with intelligence. He's been the director and the class instructor for over 20 years. He earned his BA in psychology, a master's degree in social work from Michigan State University. He is a field instructor for the Michigan State University Master of Social Work program, and he oversees graduate study internships and help them develop community-based programs. And that's what I love about this guy, is he doesn't just preach it and teach it. He walks it. And he teaches people how to take it from the schoolroom or the classroom or the college room into the community. And personally, folks, that's what's going to change this world. There's so much other stuff on this bio, but we'll let Sean kind of introduce himself. But Sean, if you can hear me tonight, welcome to Breaking the Silence and welcome to the program tonight. Are you there?
Oh, yeah, I am. I appreciate it, Greg. This is an amazing opportunity, man. I appreciate you having me on. And, being able to talk about, my experiences and my goals and purpose on being on this planet. And I think that it's to provide opportunity for success. And I try to do that because I can. One of my mentors, I call my big sister, Chris Sullivan, was a person who really inspired me to take my abilities and my passion to help people because I can and use my story as a way to communicate to people of color, as well as students, that, we're all the same and we've all had experiences, good and bad, but traumatic experiences we had. It's not barriers to our success. And how do we use those experiences to benefit others? And so that's what I'm here to do today.
That's a great shot. It took me years. And I can finally say, just in the last couple of years, I have found what my purpose is. Now, there's things that we can always do to be successful. There's things that we're kind of talented in and bent towards. But when you find out what you are created for, it makes all the difference. And it seems like you have a good grasp of that, and I appreciate that. And that's one of the things I really respect in you. So thank you for that.
Well, I appreciate it. Okay. It was, I went through a life journey to get here. It wasn't easy, but I will say, with the proper guidance and support systems in place, I was able to identify that and not be straddled with what others wanted me to be or other talents I had, but I wasn't passionate about. That's a struggle in itself. So it was a journey, but I had unbelievable supports. My wife, who played a major role in my understanding and acceptance of myself. My mom has always been there. So it takes a lot of people. It definitely takes a village to get you engaged in that journey. But that's a tough journey. Yeah. It's a tough journey.
Well, tell you what, if you want to have a comment or a question for Sean or me tonight, it's 888-627-6008. And we'd love to have you get involved with just a thought, a question, something that you're dealing with. We'll be glad to listen to your words and try to help you out the best we can. Sean, let's just use this first segment. We'll take our first break here in about 10 minutes. But in this first segment, tell me, And we don't have pre-made up questions. We just go from the heart. But I'm dying to know, because I don't know this. We've just kind of talked about it as on your webinar that we did together. But you always talk about this journey in life. What was it in your life that bent you or wired you in such a way that you want to now spend the rest of your life teaching people how to help other people in this ACEs world and this resiliency and toxic stress and all that? Is it, there's a journey that you've been on. Tell me a little bit about, if you wouldn't mind, what kind of journey it was for you.
Yeah, yeah, no problem. So, you know, my journey began from, I'm from Flint, Michigan. You know, I reside in Lansing, Michigan, but originally I'm from Flint, Michigan. I grew up, I'm a 70s baby, grew up in the 80s. And I grew up during that time where crack was an epidemic and it just destroyed the city of Flint. And so growing up during that era, you know, you saw a lot and you saw the change. Like when I was younger, you saw communities together, you saw neighbors together. But then when crack entered the scene, you saw those neighbors turn on each other. You saw the devastation that it did to people emotionally, physically, mentally, spiritually. You just saw the destruction of it. And so through that, my brother was one of those people who, you know, the life gaddy in Flint. And he became a gangbanger. I remember I was probably maybe 9, 10 years old when I first witnessed my first gang fight. And, you know, it was traumatic for me to see it and witness all this bloodshed and all this carnage amongst people. And he was really deep into it and really involved in it. And it infected and it caused pain to our family. You know, my mom, single mom, she grew up tough, and she did all she could to make sure that we were stable. And it just, the environment, you know, it pulled him in. He probably was more of a, like they say, you're a mama's baby, but papa's son. He was probably more of a papa's son, but was raised by my mom. So he didn't, you know, it wasn't the right fit for him. And so his struggles and conflicts constantly interfered with my upbringing. My mom's stress, and so that started, you know, really the anger that I had, because it was just I'm a mama's boy, and so to watch him bring that type of stress to her life every day, and then we moved. You know, I was starting to get into sports at the time, and I was getting excited about sports, but we then moved. So we moved to a community that didn't really have sports involved. So I even, you know, me and my mom relationship even grew more because I was no longer involved in sports as much as I was more at home. And it wasn't a couple of months before we moved, after we moved, that my brother was involved in a murder. And the person that he was with who murdered someone then was going to retaliate on all the people that was there with him. So all of their family. So my brother, there was two other people that was there when this guy murdered someone. He threatened to murder families if they testified against them. And so at that point, 12 years old, you know, it's not like I didn't know my pops, but it wasn't a father that I was comfortable with living with and staying with. I knew who he was. Yes, I would go over there, but it wasn't my home. It was, right. I had a father who had another family, and that was a whole different dynamic. When this happened, they uprooted me. Now, keep in mind, my mom is me and my mom, my brother, but it was really just me and my mom. And so I took on the role as little man. Like I thought I was a man, right? I thought I was the one who I took care of the outside of the home. I had little seasonal jobs where I would bring money in to help out, whatever it could be. So then when I had to leave my home because of something he did, that was my first true traumatic experience that I can truly remember what that did to me. I mean, that type of uprooting of my home to move in with a family where I don't really feel wanted, it was a definite difference between me and my stepmom and her son, right? I mean, it was differences that to a 12-year-old is significant, but maybe not to an adult. For example, there was different types of cereal that I could eat versus what he could eat. So I had to eat cereal that had no name, and I had to drink powdered milk, whereas he would be able to get regular cereal. So, I mean, and that seems insignificant to people, but to understand when you know that you feel like you're not wanted or a part of. So now I'm in this experience where I moved from my home to this place, and someone's after my mom threatened to kill her. That became such a, and I'm not there to protect her. So that really, really got to the core of my damage, because now I'm this person who can't belittle me in an identity that I gave myself. I can no longer do that, and they've taken that from me. So that really fueled my anger, and that's where I would say I really get into identifying what was going on with me as I got older. I figured out that's why I became so overprotective. Right, I became extremely overprotective, and it was me responding to that trauma, all up until I figured out what was this, where was this coming from? This was coming from my ability not to protect, and being uprooted, and then my title being taken from. And so from there on, my journey became more into how do I manage that type of anger that nobody is paying attention to because I'm a 12-year-old kid. So how do I manage that anger? What nobody didn't know is that I took it upon myself at 12. And keep in mind, these are people need, really need to understand, is that based off the experience and the knowledge and the wisdom that you have and the environment and resources around you, as a 12-year-old, you're trying to manage and put all this together, right? So you coming up with a plan that's from the mind of a 12-year-old. So what nobody knew was that I carried a gun at 12 years old.
Oh my life.
I got a hold of a gun and I carried that gun. And I carried that gun with me typically until me and my wife got together and we started dating. And she said she would not deal with anyone who had a gun. Because I was so traumatized by the by being removed and not being able to protect, I overcompensated. My trauma response was fighting. So I was never going to be in a position where I didn't have control over or anyone have control over me or what people quote unquote say punk me. No one was going to punk me. I felt like when they moved me out of my home and I didn't want to move and I told them I didn't want to move and they moved me anyway, I felt like a punk. So at that point, I started saying to myself, I'm never going to be in that position again. So I carried a gun to protect myself. That was my trauma response. And then people need to understand from a 12-year-old mind who didn't understand the dangers of that. How dangerous was it for a 12-year-old to carry a gun with them? Like, that's extremely dangerous. But in my head, I'm thinking, I got to protect my mom. I got to protect myself. I got to protect our home. That's not my job. But no one understood the what was really triggered in me, the damage that was done. And so I talked about, so this is one of the things as I got older, I started realizing I had damage. And so as I got into the field, the more I got into the field, the more I started recognizing I wasn't the only one who was carrying these type of burdens. So my conflicts with people in my community, in my neighborhood, was really our traumas clashing. Right? We all had trauma clashes and conflicts. So if I was a person whose trauma response was fight and his trauma response was fight, we would that's what would happen. Versus if my trauma response was fight and somebody else's trauma response was flight, then now it really secured my ego and saying, see, I can protect myself. But now that person's now triggered. And so we played off each other with trauma because we didn't understand or wasn't able to articulate really what was going on with us. We were struggling in our own traumas within our own community and our own homes. And so we look at trauma, you look at all these different areas that, that really plays a role. You not only have ACEs the conventional way, you have the expanded ACEs. So you're growing up in a community that's riddled with crack and drugs and pain from it. You're living in a low socioeconomic status community who has no little to no economic prosperity, no social capital. So all those things is really flooding on you and compounding what you are really dealing with personally from your own aces. So as I got older, I started recognizing, man, these things right here is really playing a significant role in my daily mode of operation.
Yeah.
So as I got into the field, I started recognizing, you know, I got several different sides of me. My wife was really instrumental in helping me with this, to kind of help me see who I was versus what I show people. So I came up with this concept called deposit self, and it really helped me, and I hope it helps others, understand who you are and how these things influence and impact you and connect. So it stands for is deposit self, and it stands for investment to the bank self.
Yeah, say that word again. Positive self.
Yeah, deposit. So it's like a deposit.
Oh, deposit.
To a bank.
Deposit self. Okay,
so it's deposit self. Right, and so it's an acronym. It's damaged, exposed, perceived, ought, secure, idea, and true self. So your damaged self is the person who experienced the traumatic event. For me, it was, one, my brother murdered someone in our own community, was a part of a murder of someone in our community, and then me and being uprooted and leaving my home.
Yeah.
So that was my damage.
Yeah, tell you what, Sean, we're going to take our first break. I want to start back in on this deposit self and let you do that acronym all the way through so I don't have to break you up in the middle of it. But let's take a break now. I tell you what, associational toxic stress, associational, because it sounds like very few things happen to you personally, or there may be other things that you're going to share later, but just being in the environment sometimes is enough to set us off and tilt that balance into a mode of where there's emotional trauma and stress that needs to be dealt with later on. So on the other side of this break, get your pencil and paper out, because this deposit self sounds fascinating. We're going to be back with Sean Hankins right after this short commercial break. It'll be about a minute and 8 seconds, something like that. Douglas, roll the commercial. We'll be right back. This couldn't be coming at a better time. Have you ever felt like you were just trapped and couldn't find your way out of darkness? Have you ever felt like you were drowning and fighting to find your next breath? Well, coming in June 2020 will be the second of a three-part trilogy, my new book, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. This new book will provide you a step-by-step approach of how to reach that destination, that important destination, called hope. Now, two additional resources are going to be made available when this book is released. One, The Map to Hope. It'll be a handy guide that you can carry around with you, put in your briefcase or put in your purse. And this guide is going to help you find your way when you're stuck in life looking and searching for hope. And then the other resource, the Overcoming the Darkness Companion Journal. I have always believed that journaling is the first step to finding real healing and hope in your life, and this journal will guide you down that path. I'm excited about these resources and this new book that's going to be released in June 2020, the Summer of Hope. Now back to the next segment of Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams right here on VBS Radio. Well, I tell you what, the band earned every dollar of that check to make that commercial music. We appreciate that. That's Overcoming the Darkness book. I tell you what, it is in the making. I am not rushing this out into the marketplace, and I want to let you know why. Is because I keep adding items to it, and we're working on a companion journal for kids. And I really think that's going to probably be the most popular thing in the whole distribution of this book, is showing kids how to deal with trauma and toxicity when it comes into their life? How do they deal with it, and how to journal and use that? Now, we have Sean Hankins with us tonight. I consider Sean a dear friend of mine. We've never met in person, but hey, you don't have to. We've just done some things together. But Sean, you were talking about your life and talking about growing up and in Flint, Michigan, and then and moving and how that trauma of gang street gang activity and crack in the community and the economic devastation. And is your mama still alive?
Yes, she actually lives with me now.
Okay, great. So she's there. What's your mom's first name?
Mary. Mary. Hansen. She is a amazing woman. Tough, strong. I mean, I think I look at a lot of my character and I get a lot of that from her. Very principle oriented. And that passed down. We passed that down to our daughter. You know, me and my wife, we took a lot of lessons we got from our parents. I know that's great. A lot of life lessons from my mom that I was able to preach to my daughter. And she's an amazing person, strong, you know, just tough as nails. I'm really big into cliches and analogies, and I think I get a lot of that from her.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, Mary, if you're listening, if you're there right there next to Sean or listening on this later, I applaud you. And from what I know of Sean, you've done an awesome job. And thank you, Mary, for hanging in there and just doing the right thing with him, because he's an awesome young man. Sean, when you you mentioned the word deposit self, start back with the D and tell me what each of those letters mean, because I've only got two of these written down. I want to make sure I don't miss anything. Deposit self.
Okay. So deposit self, and I look at it like as if you're making a deposit to a bank, in the bank of your best self, right? So the deposit, it stands for damaged, exposed, perceived, ought, secure, ideal, and true self. And so your damaged self is a person who has experienced, you know, emotional, mental, physical, or sexual hurts. Mm-hmm. And it's the person who is, you've had that experience, and that's what you're responding to. That's what you're relating to. That is kind of taken over your identity.
So is that D, that deposit, and all those things that's happened to us, does that affect how we react to everything else in our life, whether it's good, bad, or ugly?
It can. It definitely can. It could definitely have an influence on your daily mode of operation, your relationships, how you foresee dangers, joy. I mean, it could limit your ability to trust. Your ability to explore. Like as a kid, if you're damaged and you're responding to that damage, then it's hard for you to be able to see, because you're paranoid, because you are doing so much to prevent that damage from happening again, that you may do things that really prevent you from exploring and being adventurous. I'll tell you a quick story. It wasn't until about maybe 2-3 years ago, I was invited to a conference in Hawaii. Now, I'm a guy who don't fly. I hate to fly. I never want to fly. But my wife was like, Hawaii, and it was close to her birthday. She was like, yep, that conference, you're going to it, and I am too, and thank you. So we get to Hawaii, right? And so I'm on a plane. I'm scared to death, but we make it. We get there. We're in this beautiful room. We got one window. You see the ocean, one room, mountain. I mean, one window, you see the ocean, one room, you see the mountains. So we go there, we look at that. Beautiful. So I happen to look up, and I say to my wife, I said, hey, look at this sun. I mean, look at this scenery. The sun is so beautiful. Like, this is incredible. And she was like, Sean, that's the same sun in Lansing. I said, what? She was like, yeah, it's the same sun. What we talked about afterwards, and my wife is my biggest consultant and confidant. Everything that I learn and do, and I tell people this all the time, she's really the catalyst. I mean, she is the person I talk to get understanding and confidence of what we're going through and how to articulate it. She is by far one of the smartest people I've ever met in my entire life. And wow. So we
what's
talked
her,
about
what's
it.
What's her first name?
Her first name is Renee, R-E-N-A, Renee. Okay. Yeah. Right. And so she says to me, so we're talking about this sunset, and she says, how is it that you didn't recognize it's the same sun? Because I've been so paranoid. My damage from my earlier life of never being, always being afraid of what's coming around the corner. I'm always looking to the side. I'm always looking behind me. But I never look up because there's nothing up there that can hurt me. So all while I'm doing my scan around myself, I missed out on how many sunsets have I missed out on?
Yeah.
How many times did I miss a bird flying through the air and seeing how beautiful that was? How many rainbows did I miss because I'm looking around because my damaged self is saying protect your parameters. Right. So it can definitely influence who you are because you start living to protect. And so the next one becomes that exposed self. So once you are damaged, now that exposed self who was very vulnerable is all about protecting. So that's where the trauma responses are starting to play, make its play, because that exposed self will do everything it can to protect its damaged self. So your trauma responses, especially if it's been chronic, it becomes, instead of it being an autonomic response, it becomes a mental unpreparation. So now you're not angry, you're enraged. You know, your fight is a rage. And so your flight becomes, I can't be controlled, right? I'm doing everything I can to avoid this moment. So I prepare myself by being perfect. I prepare myself from never being in that situation. So I'm always running from the potential of being damaged again.
Wow.
My freeze is, there's nothing I can do. I can't run from it. I can't fight it. So I hide from it. And I can hide from disassociation. I can hide into creating a world where I'm just flying mentally checked out. And so you have that. Then the fawn is you become a very compliant person. These are your responses to chronic traumas. And your damaged self, you're now figuring out, how do I manage that when that damaged self is exposed? What do I do? How do I respond? Jay-Z said something one time in an interview. He said he didn't understand when guys pass each other, they say, what you looking at? What they're referring to is, do you see my damaged self? And if you see my damaged self, then I have to get in protection mode. Whatever my protection mode is, whether it's fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, if you see that, then I got to protect it.
Oh, right? That's
powerful. And so you get this exposed self who is always triggered by somebody pricking at the damage, pulling that scab off the damage. And so what you do in order to hide that damaged self is you come up with a perceived self. So you create a mask. And that mask becomes what you show the world in order to hide the damage. For me, it became slash comedian slash wanting to play sports, you know, silly guy. So that was me. I wasn't a big time athlete. I loved basketball. I played, so I would play every day in the parks. Every day at the gyms, and I was a goofball in a sense in the classroom. In some classes, people probably considered me a class clown. What would happen with that is because I could get away with being silly. It became my mask that no one would ever even think about looking deeper into me because you just went with what I showed you, and then that created my art self because the expectations of me now. Was Sean's the funny guy. So every time you see him, Sean, say something funny. People would say that to me. Sean, make us laugh. Sean, say something funny. Sean, we bored. Do something to make us laugh. So that became my art self. So my art self was based off the perceived self that I created in order to gain security, which is your secure self. Your secure self is a person who secures the insecurity. They won't ever challenge or try any adventures where they know they can't win. So for me to continue to be the class clown guy was safe because that's what they expected from me. It's what I could present, and it was always about protecting that damn self and not allowing it to be exposed. So then when I met my wife, through one of my friends when we was in high school. We were freshmen, and I went over his house to play baseball together, on the baseball team together. So I went over his house one day, and his sister was sitting on the porch. Now, I wasn't a big dating guy. I wasn't into girls or like anything like that, because I was kind of intimidated or scared of girls, because I was into sports and I was into goofing off. And my mom would probably kill me if I ever brought a girl home in the first place. So, but when I met her, it was something. And although we were very young, she just had such a pleasant spirit. And I remember thinking, man, she was just really nice. So as we grew up, we started, you know, liking each other. So when we was in a program called Upward Bound. It was a program for underprivileged kids who had college potential. So at this time, I'm 16, she's 14. We're sharing a class, and I'm being goofball as usual. And she said to me in front of everybody, why are you always trying to make people laugh instead of show who you really are? Mm-hmm. And that was the first time somebody's ever challenged me in that way. Because I was a guy that covered with jokes. I had a car that was a souped-up car. I had a ridiculous haircut, right, that had a rose in it and just a rose in the back and a leaf in the front. I mean, you talking about the 80s worst nightmare look. That was me, right? So, but I'm peacocking because I don't want you to see the damage. And she saw through all that. Our conversations, she was like, you are really an intelligent guy, but you're too afraid to show it. And this at 14, she was able to identify that. And once she was able to identify that, and it took me a while because my first response when I'm exposed is to fight. So my job then was I was going to talk about it. Mm-hmm. She never backed down. No matter what I said, she was like, what you say about me, don't show your intelligence. You should show your intelligence because that's what the world needs to see. Mm. That was my ideal self because all while I was being a perceived mask, I had my mask on that was being celebrated and created a secure environment for me. It wasn't who I wanted to be.
Yeah.
So that was the first inclination of me being my ideal self. So in school, although I was a clown, I was pretty good in science and math. So I ended up coming to Michigan University going for my chemical engineering degree. And so although it wasn't bad, everybody else was struggling with things like organic chemistry. I didn't struggle with that, but I was sad. Right. I was really because it wasn't what I wanted to do. I did what people told me to do. And I got celebrated for it because I was good at math and science. I did math and science. I got rewarded. I stayed there. It wasn't what I wanted to do. So fast forward, summertime hits there. I talked to my wife. At the time, I'm driving. I'm trying to figure out there's something wrong. Why come I'm not happy? And then something hit me at a stoplight, and it says you need to change your major and you need to call Renee. By this time, she was going to college in Ohio.
Oh.
So I call her, and I say, hey, I like you. Well, she thought I was joking, but eventually she believed that I liked her. We started dating, and she said it's okay for you to be able to show the world who you are.
Wow.
And so I stopped. Exactly. What freedom, right? So I stopped being what everybody thought I was supposed to be or what I was portraying, and I started being me. And I was always in the social injustice. All of my rap music, everybody else listened to rap. I listened to rap music too. I grew up on it. But my favorite acts was people who was talking about social injustice, right? So Public Enemy, the Ghetto Boys, N.W.A., those groups are Boogie Down Productions, those were groups that really I identified with because they were talking about things that really excited me. Although I was talented in math and science, it wasn't a passion. Once I figured out, okay, my ideal self is really a person who loves philosophy, and who wants to be able to be a mentor and wants to show people that you can be yourself and it's okay as long as you get the support system, the resources and environments. You can be whatever you want to be, but you got to have these things in place and you have to be humble. You have to be humble enough to be able to acknowledge and be able to analyze your intra-actualization. And I say that because you have to be able to go through the process of being able to admit your narrative, not make up one. You have to be able to acknowledge the contributions of society and you that has contributed to where you are presently. You have to accept the problems that your damage, your deposit self has created and been in operation of. You have to become accountable for the change. The conversations I had with my wife, the resources, the support from my mom, would allow me to be able to say, I can go on this journey. So once I started being my ideal self, once I got the concept of who I was, by really being able to analyze and break down my intra-actualization, then I was able to act on it, which becomes your true self. Your true self is a person who acts on your ideal self. So my values, beliefs, all those things really started being something that I acted upon. And if it offended anyone else, especially those who wanted to keep me in a place that I didn't want to be at, who only saw me in a certain way, that I admit I created the image, but I wanted to grow and now wasn't allowed to move on from that group. Some of them, I lost friends because they all of a sudden it became, well, Sean's not being funny anymore. You know, he's always in his books, so he's reading, or he's quoting philosophers, or he's always thinking about how to be able to have impact and help others. Mm. I had support from my wife to say, it's okay, you got somebody to ride with you. From there, I met my first true mentor in a guy named William Davidson, Bill Davidson, the guy who created the very program that I'm the director of. Once again, I want to play basketball. I am playing basketball. I'm going to the gym. I'm going to open gym for MSU. So I'm like, wow, in the summertime, I'm playing with the players. My wife says to me, there's this program that sent a letter that I think you should be a part of. And I'm like, no, because they're practicing and I want to get a chance to go play with them. Well, you know, at the time, you listen to your wife, you're probably okay. She put her foot down. I went to this orientation. Now I'm the director of the very program that she encouraged me to be a part of.
Wow. We're going to take our last break real quick. Yeah. I'm going to cut in. We're going to finish this up. We have one more segment left of the program, and I tell you what, this deposit itself is life-changing, and I didn't even know we were going to go there tonight, but I'm so glad you did. On the other side of this break, we're going to dig a little deeper with that, and then we're going to want to ask you about what's happening in our country with our kids. How do we need to help them develop resiliency in the last segment. So stick with us. We have one last commercial, and then we're going to be back with the last segment with Sean Hankins of Breaking the Silence. Be right back.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers A Child Called It and The Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Thank you, Douglas. I appreciate that. I tell you what, Shattered by the Darkness book. It is selling better this past week than I think it has in the entire year and a half it's been out. I don't know what's going on. Somebody is listening to the webinars or something, but there's just been a new energy of the book, so that just excites me. But if you want to get that, feel free to hop on Amazon or go into your Barnes & Noble store or whatever. It's right there on the bookshelves, and feel free to pick that up and contact me and let me know what you think about it. I would be honored to have you read that. Sean Hankins from the University of Michigan State University is with us this evening, and I've had two emails since we went to commercial. And Sean, I want to make sure I give the folks the right information. The deposit is damaged, exposed, perceived. They couldn't figure out what the O stood for. Did you say out, O-U-T?
Yeah, O-U-G-H-T, out. Your ought self. So it's what you ought to be.
What you ought to be, O-U-G-H-T. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
so it's your ought self. So it's, and what that means is it's the person that people want you and expect you to be. Whether that's who you really are or not, is based off what you set off a perception, and now they won't let you out, and it's what they want. It was what they want you to be. So I was good at math, so everybody thought you ought to be an engineer.
I'm with you. Okay. Well, they couldn't understand the word, and it may be our connection tonight, but it's your ought, O-U-G-H-T, and then secured, ideal, and true. Yeah, that's excellent. I don't know about you, but I may steal that from you. That's just excellent.
That's fine. Okay, world. Yeah, so
you heard that, world. So I can steal that from you.
With my wife involved, you got to get it. You got to manage with her.
Well, I'll tell you what. If I was you, I would be loving on Mary and Renee like all get out, because they have made an awesome person, because that is so great to have them in your life that they have just. Yeah. And when she said, why are you not letting the world see you who you really are? That is life changing.
Yeah, and, it was. It really made such a difference, because once I was able to truly feel supported enough to show who I was, I met my first mentor. Right, yeah. Bill Davidson, first mentor. Guy, he really set me on the map, showed me how to be a man, showed me how to be a leader, showed me how to be a mentor. And so through that is when I decided this is what I want to do. I now have found my path. I want to be able to help young people the way that he was able to see me and support me and help young people. Because he took what was my – and the reason I use deposit self, it's because it's an investment, right? Like you're damaged, you're exposed, you're perceived, your ideal, your truth. Those are deposits. Now, up until the ideal self, those are things that you are depositing, but they're bad investments in a sense. It's you break up when you become your ideal self and you start having credit. So if you look at it from a debit versus credit perspective, the ideal true self is more of a credit to who you are now versus the other ones, which was taken away from you. Those were the experience that you went through that's going to help you become what I call deposit into your best, the bank of best self. And the best stands for benevolent, enlightenment, serenity, and transcendent self. So you're taking those deposits that you had. And although the damage and exposed and the perceived and the ought self wasn't so-called coming from a healthy place, those were also things that helped make you. So they're investments, but they're investing into your best self. And so what I took from my mentor, benevolence is kindness, right? Learn how to be kind. Like just learn. Don't be so angry. Be a kind person. Mm-hmm. Enlightenment, learn, knowledge, competence, and wisdom. I mentor a lot of students and youth in the community. I'm also a coach for the MSU club basketball team. A lot of what I do is not so much about the sport, but it's about the mentorship and the providing the knowledge, competence, and wisdom. So I do that through enlightenment, serenity. I'm at peace now, right? I'm no longer in a paranoid state. I'm at peace, and my transcendence is to take everything that people have poured in and has invested and deposited in me, and how do I give it back to the world? Having platforms like this allows me to transcend my knowledge to not just my community or my family or my tribe, but to anyone. And so it's all about being able to give back. And once again, Chris Sullivan said, why do you do this? Because you can.
Mm.
Right? So I've been blessed to have a lot of people support me and encourage me. I have wonderful friends. I have three main friends who really support me throughout my whole journey, which is Kyle Foster, Julius Edwards, and Jason Murphy. These guys have really poured into me more than I can ever pour into them, that allow me to be me, to be a freer, more opening person. So now my goal and my journey is, how do I help people identify so they can create? I'm a program developer. Not only do I direct the program, I design the develop program for different populations, whether it's for young men, whether it's for girls who have been abused, whether it's for young men who have been charged with a sex offense crime, and everybody's looking at this person as a horrible person without recognizing they've been traumatized. And so how do we help them? So my job is to be able to help people identify and give back through best self.
Wow.
That's my journey.
That is so good. I'm going to put you on the spot. We're going to run out of time, and I'm going to go ahead and invite you back to the program, because we didn't even get to any of the things that I wanted to get to we talked about on the webinar the other day that I thought the world would just love to hear. But we'll do that some other time. If I could just ask you a question, I'm going to put the spotlight, let's just pretend, Sean, for the next couple minutes, the entire world is leaning in to this computer, this radio show, their iPods or whatever, and turning it up and listening to you right now. And the question that they have for you is, what in the world is going on, and what do we need to do to fix this? How are we going to come out of this with hope? Sean, what would you say to the entire world? What would be your best advice in a minute or two? No pressure, but the entire world's listening. Think about it for a second. What would you say?
What I would say to the entire world is to be honest with yourself.
Okay.
Like, both parties need to be. It starts with you looking inside yourself and asking yourself, what am I afraid of, and what am I contributing? For the Black community, the conditions that we're living in creates us to endure and suffer from others' benefit from our demise. As a Black man, I have been trained to be prepared to fight for my life, to be in a survival mode. I challenge everyone to look inside yourself and see, what have those things done to prevent you from supporting humanity? Because just as much as I have received so much fire and oppression and systemic racism, I have to look at how those things have influenced and impacted my abilities to give, to be at peace, to smile. How are those things affecting me? Although I didn't cause those things have influenced my contribution to influence others, because now I have this wall up. And so that contribution for white people, you have to look at it and say, how am I like-minded? I may not put my knee on someone's neck, but do I recognize the benefits I have from oppression of another race? There's benefits. And to challenge yourself to look at those benefits and say, how do I stop that? How do I take away the benefits that I receive from systemic oppression and institutionalized racism? Those generational toxic ideologies that have been taught to me, how do I stand up to them? And for the for the black community, how do I let go and start having an uprising instead of a reaction? It's time for everyone to listen, be honest, give. There are different forms of ideologies out there. There's greed. There is gluttony. There is pride that's really, really pushing capitalism. And because when you put dollar over humanity, when you put insecurity and inferiority over partnership, you get these responses. We have to have people who are really riddled with white supremacist ideology. We have to be able to stand up to them, no matter what they have on the outset. Whether you're a police officer, whether you're a judge, whether you're a bank officer, we have to be able to stand up to them and say, this is inhumane, this is not equal, and I'm not standing for it. And I'm going to make sure that now I'm going to have a voice. White people, have a voice. Help. Be able to say, I'm not going to benefit from the demise of another. I'm going to support. I challenge all people of power and position, how do you look into a community and offer services that you can provide, whether it's economic support, whether it's physical support, whether it's a lending ear? Don't benefit from someone else's demise. Don't look at systemic racism and say that that's for me. I benefit from it, but I'm too ashamed and guilty to say that I benefit. Own it. If you're benefiting from it, if you're getting privilege from it, own it as a problem and prevent the problem. It's not going to feel good in the beginning, but it's going to be an investment into your soul. Invest into your soul is what I would say. And for black people, continue to unite. We are uniting. All races are now starting to unite. Black people, I would say, be proud of who you are. What resiliency. You want to talk about a resilient community and a resilient race. We've endured. We adapt, we adjust, and we still smile. Celebrate. The ability to do that is something, is a characteristic that you have to celebrate in yourself, and others need to celebrate and acknowledge and appreciate that as well. Well, so that was more than a minute, but.
Oh, no, that's good. No, it's good stuff. I wanted to get that from you, and I hear you. That was awesome. If somebody wants to, because we're in the last couple minutes of the program, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, Sean, how's the best way for them to reach out to you if they have a comment or a question, or just want to maybe have you come to their school or organization or group and talk? What's your email, or how would you want them to contact you?
Yeah, they can contact me through my email, which is HankinsS@MSU. So that's HankinsS@MSU.edu. Or you can reach me on my Gmail, which is HankinsS1@gmail.com. And I don't mind my phone number. I mean, they can call me, 517-507-7886. I'm here to help because I can. I've been blessed with talents to be a vessel of knowledge, confidence, and wisdom. So I share whatever I have to be able to offer supports to anybody. I design programs that help people take from a vision to an objective. So I do frameworks. So whatever somebody needs from me, get in contact with me.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Sean, for being with us tonight. It was just a joy. And I want to thank your mama and your wife for depositing in you greatness. Yes. And I applaud you for what you have done with that, and how you're out making a difference. And one day you're going to be able to see in heaven all the different lives that you made an impact on while you were here on earth. And I think that's going to be a vast amount. And I applaud you. Thank you, Sean, for being on the program tonight. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate you, man. Keep doing what you do.
And I think we have a friendship that is going to just continue on, and hopefully we'll get to do some more projects later on. Maybe some more webinars.
Whatever you need from me.
Yep. Okay, we'll do. We'll do. Same here, Sean. Thank you for being with us. Next week, right here on the program, we have Eloja Penny, and she's a life coach, and she's going to tell about her breaking the silence with her work in sex trafficking in Las Vegas, her own personal dealings with sexual abuse and domestic abuse, and how to overcome that. And how to become the best possible person that you can be. And I always end the program every week this way. And I tell you what, this coming week and the last few weeks, the last few months, we've needed this few sentences more than ever. No matter what's going on around you, no matter what's happened to you in the past, no matter what's happening to you right now, what you're dealing with right now, no matter what, I want to let you know, I promise you, there is always, always hope. Always hope. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Be with us next week right here at 8 p.m. Central Time, live from the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas, for another edition of Breaking the Silence. Douglas, take us out. God bless you. Have a great week. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1. For the next episode of Breaking the Silence.